Hello, world. Welcome to the Breakout Finder podcast. I'm your host, Nate Liss. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, as always, is Mr. Ryan Lopes. You can find him on Twitter at StillRyan5. And you're probably wondering why I'm wearing this yellow, fuzzy, hot, not like hot like looks, but like warm to the touch outfit currently. That's because we're recording one day before Halloween, Ryan.
I'm a big Halloween guy, Nate. I'm a big Halloween guy. Love the festivities. Big fan of seasonal beers. Not a big candy guy, but just like all the hullabaloo, I guess you could say. Love a good funny costume parties, all that stuff. I'm just a Halloween guy. So I'm excited to be recording, dude. We're back after a week off, so I'm also kind of re-energized about that. So we got all the stars aligning right now for us, buddy.
That's right. I was gone. I took a week off, did a vacation. Still out there trying to grind for the folks. It's difficult. It's difficult on vacation. You don't want to, but you know, it's a servitude to the people, and I'm here to deliver. So that's what I strive to do. With that being said, Ryan, we should jump into some topics here. This is a show that's known for not playing around, obviously.
Right. Very, very serious. Very serious show.
You wrote a lot of these questions, so why don't you just lead us off?
Yeah, we'll get right into things. And full disclosure, you and I were talking off air. We are two, again, very serious podcast hosts here. A lot of time and effort goes into these shows. Admittedly, yes. I was in the air for most of Sunday, so I've been kind of playing catch up here. So and you're back in the fold, Nate, after a week off. I'm hoping you can do a lot of the heavy lifting for us here, man. Yeah. I always kind of lean on you. This is going to be one of those episodes where it's even more so. So let's get things going, man. Right off the top, I think relatively quiet week, you know, leading up to this Sunday's games. But I think the biggest topic of conversation, one of the biggest topics of conversation, is kind of this trade deadline fallout. And one of the moves that did happen was Kenyon Drake shipped over to Arizona. And so there's a couple different kind of parts to this here. First of all, we can talk about David Johnson. David Johnson might be fucked. Which is not good if you are rostering David Johnson. We could talk about Chase Edmonds a little bit, who did have a 3-score game a couple weeks ago. But we'll save that a little bit because we have a Patreon question about Chase Edmonds. So let's get started, Nate. Let's talk about Kenyon Drake. What are your thoughts about Kenyon Drake in Arizona?
Oh my. Here's my thing about Kenyon Drake in Arizona. You know, the Miami Dolphins had to let Kenyon Drake go. He was coming up on a free agent contract at the end of the year. They were trying to get value out of him. The Dolphins are clearly tanking. They're clearly attempting to rebuild. I thought the other night I had some money on the Pittsburgh game. I was hoping that the Dolphins were going to do something for me there. There was a little hope, but that was soon destroyed because Ryan Fitzpatrick can never hold it together long enough to get it done. But when you're talking about the Arizona Cardinals, this is such a weird backfield now. Drake should, by all accounts, be the guy this Sunday, assuming that David Johnson doesn't suit up. I know they say he got into limited practice here recently. They're still unsure if he's going to suit up. If nothing else, it's probably going to be a running back by committee. You know, so far this year, David Johnson's been incredibly hit or miss. His volume hasn't been that good. His target opportunity's been much better than it was, you know, previously. But the rushing attempts are kind of down. In the games that he was playing, he wasn't really producing. It was questionable kind of all year with David Johnson, and now we've got the injuries. And then Chase Edmonds steps into a role, and he's out for multiple weeks. And he has these blow-up games, two in a row. And kudos to anyone like me. I sold Chase Edmonds before his performance last week. I could sense with my spider senses the bed shit game was coming, and I moved him quick. And I'm glad I did, because here goes Arizona bringing in Alfred Morris. Now we've got Zach Zenner. Now we've got Kenyon Drake. If Chase Edmonds gets healthy and David Johnson's around, I have no idea what's going to happen here. But it's got to be debatably true at this point that David Johnson's value has never been lower than it is right now. I mean, this is peak bottom for David Johnson in Arizona.
Are you out there looking to, as such, again, we talk about these buy low names often, Nate. Is David Johnson someone you're actively looking to scoop up on the low, as the youth of America might say?
I mean, David Johnson signed a 3-year contract in 2018, I think. I'd have to look back at his contract year, so he's clearly coming up here in the next year or so. David Johnson's almost 28 years old. There's got to still be some tread left on these tires, but the injury history and things that are starting to build, that's scary. This Arizona offense was supposed to get better. They invested in all these offensive pieces, and it just hasn't been that great. David Johnson is just outside the top 25 in most metrics, except for yards per touch. He's averaging 5.7, but outside the top 25 in breakaways, in evaded tackles, juke rate, tons of stuff on Player Profiler. Number 34 in yards created. Just hasn't been a good year for David Johnson overall. So I don't know where your head is with it. I realize he's number 11 currently in fantasy points per game, and his opportunity's been decent. But in this offense, I'm not loving him. I really do hope he gets out of Arizona. It just hasn't been a good situation with all these new players coming in. It's just way too muddy for me.
Yeah, it'd be cool to see Kingsbury kind of utilize Johnson in that like true kind of slot receiver or some, you know, kind of play to his pass catching strengths. I mean, David Johnson to me is kind of like, you know, we had that 2013 Josh Gordon season, which was just incredible. And David Johnson gave us that. I think it was that 2016 campaign that he had where he completely burst on the scene and just stunted. And then ever since then with the injuries and coaching changes and stuff, it just hasn't been the same. I don't know what to do with David Johnson, man. I mean, there's so much to like about him, like on paper, but I'm not sure we'll ever get that 2016 output again. I do want to quickly talk about Kenyon Drake, because I might be like one of the weirdos that like is kind of like a Kenyon Drake fan. You talk about Player Profiler here, man. 6'1", 210. 82nd percentile college yards per carry, compares favorably to Lamar Miller. We can do with that whatever we choose. 86th percentile speed score. Not necessarily a standout athlete, 29th percentile, but I just like his build, man. I like his game. I think it says something that, you know, multiple Miami staffs now have said he just isn't worth their time, and obviously eventually shipped him off here. So I think that obviously does say something. And I don't have a thing for like Alabama backs per se, but I like his profile. I like his build. 2018 season, man, he saw 73 targets, 53 for 477 and 5 scores. So we know he's good through the air. I like the Arizona spot, but as you kind of alluded to, It's going to kind of get muddy if they have everyone healthy, and kind of I'm not really sure where this coaching staff's going to go. All right, so enough about Kenyon Drake, who, again, a lot of people probably aren't huge fans of. Let's talk about Miami a little bit, Nato, and kind of the fallout there. Obviously, we know Miami's, you know, tanking for Tua, tanking for somebody. They've made a lot of that pretty clear. So we're kind of left with the Mark Walton / maybe Kalen Ballage show. You can kind of share your thoughts about those guys. I know we've kind of touched on Ballage a little bit this offseason, but there's also Myles Gaskin, who's kind of buried there as well. Are any of these players worthwhile for whatever season-long purposes or through a dynasty lens?
I don't think any of them are worth anything in dynasty. And we kind of talked about this 2 weeks ago, Mark Walton's profile. I mean, you know, not a super high draft pick, but then again, he's right in that Justice Hill range. I wasn't a fan of the situation, and I wasn't necessarily a fan of the player either. There wasn't anything to me that really popped with him. If for season long, if they're saying that Mark Walton's the guy, then I get it. Yeah, go get him. Take your risk when you start him. I don't think that he's going to have a lot of blow up games, and you're going to have to be really matchup dependent with him. As far as Myles Gaskin, he's a Washington guy. You know, I don't know if you were a fan of him coming out. I mean, seventh round pick. this is a thin depth chart. He's not a big physical player. So I don't really know where I'm at on any of these Miami players. I don't like Miami at all. I believe that they are a front runner to add one of these 2020 backs next year with all these picks that they're acquiring. So in terms of a dynasty lens, I'm not concerned about any of these players. I'm not going after any of these players. If you picked Walton up in dynasty, you're definitely looking to flip him. I'm not holding him into the offseason. And most leagues have a trade deadline coming up. So if you're not a competitor, or even if you are a competitor and you don't plan on starting Walton, I would move him for whatever you can, because I just don't see a future in Miami.
Yeah, Gaskin is that, you know, 5'9", 205, 74th percentile spark score, which is interesting enough. College dominator rating was up there to 77th percentile. So he definitely produced in school, but it's just kind of one of those things, man. We always talk about, you know, watching players on tape, and obviously balancing all that out with the actual metrics themselves. But, you know, players you gotta kind of, you know, move around your seat and kind of get up a little bit when a player kind of makes you feel a certain way. And Gaskins was a fun watch, but not a player I necessarily would go out of my way for. And obviously the draft capital that was spent on him eventually kind of tells a story. So if there is a shot there in Miami, it's a really long, long, arduous hill of sorts. And like you said, I think Miami's definitely one of the teams that's going to look to reload and restock. And I can definitely see one of these 2020 backs land there early enough, which would completely squash anything for Walton or Gaskins or anyone else there for that matter. Real quick, before we push forward any further, we mentioned Patreon and we mentioned Patreon questions. And I think the most popular Patreon question was about Chase Edmonds, who we talked about a little bit here. So the Patreon question that we pulled here, Nate, so I'll ask you this one, and then I think there might be one for me here, which you can ask me. Chase Edmonds in Dynasty, buy, sell, or hold? And that's from our guy Duke.
Man, and I think that this question was written before the Kenyon Drake trade took place, because that definitely changes things. Or maybe it was written after. I can't see the date on it, so I can't remember. Man, I crapped on Chase Edmonds after he was drafted. The college, the size. There was a lot of reasons why I wasn't a big fan of Chase Edmonds. Then he comes out and has, you know, two pretty big blow-up games in a row. Or at least three good games, and then a third game that was completely bonkers with three touchdowns. And he was kind of taking on a bit of that David Johnson role. He was getting, you know, some feature opportunity in the run game. And I like Chase Edmonds as a player long term. The question is he going to stick around in Arizona? I don't even know that Arizona is going to re-sign Kenyon Drake, right? He's coming up on a free agent contract. So this may still be that, you know, a job for Edmonds in the future. If David Johnson, who has been, I don't want to say touchdown dependent, but his targets have been great, and that's what's been saving him, because he hasn't been running the ball well this year. And that's where Edmonds started to get a little more opportunity in some of these games, starting to pick up 6, 8, 5 carries in games. But if Kenyon Drake doesn't re-sign, there is something there's a lure to Chase Edmonds in Arizona. So I would be holding if I had him. I think your sell window is kind of destroyed right now. If you didn't sell like I did after week 7, when he had, you know, week 5, 6, and 7 in a row where he had some big games, you're probably stuck holding him now, because he's already hurt. They signed Kenyon Drake. David Johnson will likely be back. We're hearing running back by committee. I would hold through the offseason to see what Arizona does at the position. I don't think they do much. I just don't think they re-sign Kenyon Drake. I think he goes elsewhere next year. And yeah, I mean, I don't hate Edmonds. I like him. I've turned the corner on him, but you're gonna have to wait to see what his value is.
Go with that second question, man. I'm staring at the show sheet here, man. I'm a little bit nervous. It's got my name written on it, which is never a good thing. But fire away, man.
This is another Patreon question, and if you're interested in getting your Patreon question or a question read live on the show and getting an answer to that difficult, tough, hard to sift through information, come check out the Patreon, patreon.com/breakoutfinder. The community is growing every day. You can go check it out, see how many people are over there. Sign up. We're doing dynasty articles. Hopefully Ryan's got something in the mix. We'll see. Time dependent.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'll find out what he does.
I'm excited. They got to get excited, too.
And I'm working on a really cool a really cool award for people that sign up, and I'm going to grant it to the first 50 people that sign up. We've already got somewhere beyond 30 right now. So the next, 15 to 18 people that sign up, I'm going to put them in the same early group for a big reward, and all the people that have already signed up are going to get it. So we'll find out once I release that information. But here's a question for Ryan on Patreon, and this was sent anonymously via direct message.
Oh, boy. It
says, this is a question for Ryan. Is the earth flat? This is not a football question.
That's the beautiful thing about Patreon, right? The Breakout Finder, man, we got something for everybody here. So if you want to ask me about your flat earth conspiracies, you want to ask Nate about climbing through windows or wearing chicken suits or the beautiful tropical islands that he frequents, we can do all that at the Breakout Finder. So something for everyone there. So to answer this question, unequivocally, no. The Earth is for sure round. And I say unequivocally because I've seen the way the timeline just dumps on flat Earth truthers, man. I don't want to be. I can't take that kind of heat. You know what I mean? So I'm gonna say absolutely not. Earth is round. I can't believe that we're talking about this right now.
This is important. These are the tough topics that people want answers to. Can you see what this is?
You are full on Big Bird.
Yeah, I'm full on Big Bird. And these podcasts are also being recorded in video. You can find it on YouTube, search Breakout Finder. Every episode is on there. So if you were interested in seeing one of the guests we got on recently with Pete Overzet, we all wore suits.
Did we ever?
Drink fine alcoholic beverages.
Aged. It was aged. It was vintage shit.
It was good stuff. So
great stuff.
You can check that out. All right, Ryan, what do we got?
Let's keep it moving, man. We didn't take out any of the fine, basement, wine cellar shit tonight. That's only reserved for the special guests. I want to circle back around to some trade deadline stuff here. There was tons. I don't know if you were kind of following remote there, Nate, but there was tons of buzz, tons of players' names getting thrown out there like there is every year. And just like every year, essentially, no one that was rumored to get moved got moved. So I want to talk to you about some of your favorite, what if scenarios, maybe some names to kind of focus on for this coming offseason as well, assuming that there's some, still some tension with their respective franchises or, contracts don't get renewed or whatever the case may be. So let's talk about guys like, and again, feel free to pick and choose your favorites out of this list here to share with the good folks. Melvin Gordon, Robbie Anderson, Devontae Freeman was like a surprise one that came out today. Schefter kind of dropped that name. Le'Veon Bell was like a last minute name up against the deadline yesterday. AJ Green, of course. OJ Howard, who we talked to our guy Russi Clay about a lot. So he was obviously rumored. And Tyler Eifert. Those are the kind of the 6-7 names that I had written down. So comment on some of those, man, or anyone that I forgot about that you would have liked to see move and where and why and all that good shit.
Yeah. One name that I would have liked to have seen moved, and he's number 4 at his position, I think, by contract, would have been Kyle Rudolph. God, he is just dead in Minnesota. And I wish he could have got out of there. But amongst the list that you said, let's talk about AJ Green for a minute. AJ Green's 2019 has been a waste at this point. He's been injured. We've been waiting for him to come back because he's an alpha wideout. I mean, one of the best wideouts that we've ever seen. And there was a true hope that even at 31, we were going to see AJ Green come back this year. And now there's been rumors that they were going to shut him down. But as we got closer to the trade deadline, this Bengals team is a mess. They just benched Andy Dalton, which came out, just after the trade deadline?
Yeah.
So they didn't even attempt to move Andy Dalton. They said they weren't going to move AJ Green. I would have loved to have seen AJ Green go almost literally anywhere else. But the Cincinnati Bengals, I mean, I wish that he would have gone to somebody that, like the New Orleans Saints. It would have been fun to see him go there. Would have been fun to see him go to the Green Bay Packers. There would have been a lot of offenses that I rather would have seen him in. I still like AJ Green. There's a lot of guys that are ageist that are talking about this apex, and me and Russell Clay have talked about this a lot as well since you brought his name up. there are just some players that are generational, that are going to produce a little longer than other types of players that are hit throughout their career. And I think that AJ Green is truly one of those guys. I mean, he came up short on 1,000 yards a year ago, and I believe he missed a game or missed some plays. Maybe it was 2 years ago. But nonetheless, he's a player that I've just always had an affinity for, and I wish he would have got out of Cincinnati. But I think the belief at this point is that Cincinnati goes after a quarterback. I mean, what are your thoughts on Cincinnati? Or do you think they're going after pass rush?
Yeah, no, I think they're going to go. They'll be drafting top two, top three. So I imagine it's the LSU kid. It could be Tua. Depends who, you know, if the Dolphins are going one overall, whatever signal caller the Dolphins don't take, I assume the Bengals will be right behind him, and I assume the Bengals will take that player. But man, this guy Chase Young, we don't talk about IDP or these defensive players often, man. But Chase Young is literally, I mean, the best. I was talking to a couple of some good, you know, draft Twitter buddies, you know, that we've made over the years here. And I mean, dude, he is legit, you know, one of the best, you know, pass rushers since, like, I guess, like a Clowney or one of the Boses. I mean, that's not going back too far, but I mean, like, this guy is just. He's just unreal, man. So if you take him one overall, no one's going to be kind of pointing fingers or asking questions. So special player. As far as me, man, a couple of these guys, O.J. Howard, we talked about with Russie about, you know, obviously O.J. Howard and the Patriots was just that was the fit that was supposed to be. We didn't get that. Tyler Eifert was rumored to the Patriots. If you're a good tight end, you had the Patriots, you know, stamp on you. Le'Veon Bell, that was a weird one, man. The Jets just obviously paid him, and then there was a rumor again, kind of last minute, that they were looking to trade him before the deadline. I would have loved to see him in like a Kansas City or something like that. Same goes for a Melvin Gordon. He doesn't look good at all, buddy, and he might be donezo. So I don't even know if we care about Melvin Gordon up until the trade deadline. The Chargers need to do the right thing and just feed Austin Eckler their true running back one there. Let's keep it moving though. The next note that I had, the next player I kind of want to talk about, and I might be alone with this guy as well. Chris Herndon, obviously had the 4-game suspension to start the season. Had a pretty interesting 2018. Was kind of building that rapport. You know, if we want to get kind of super coach narrative cliche, you know, play quarterback tight end narrative there. And obviously started the season suspended and then came back and now is banged up. So we haven't seen Herndon yet. I'm excited about Herndon. This Jets team seems kind of messy, though. I don't know if it even matters anymore. Do you have any Chris Herndon-related thoughts?
Oh, man. This is another tough one. I'm with you. I was a fan of Herndon when his kind of semi-breakout started happening in 2018. This was a guy that we had talked about on the Sonic Truth podcast a bunch. I mean, he had numerous double-digit finishes in 2018, number 16 in points per game for tight ends. But, what a mess it is for the New York Jets. I mean, what do you even do here? They kept around Robbie Anderson. They didn't trade Robbie Anderson. That's a name that you dropped. I thought Robbie Anderson was on the move. I mean, it almost feels like the Jets are in a rebuild again. I can never figure out what their plan is. They kept Robbie Anderson. I love Robbie Anderson. He seemed to be happy about it on Twitter, I believe. He wanted to stay with the Jets. But Herndon's a player I'd want to acquire. Again, when the chips are down, when the value is down, and a player has this sort of upside, I'm willing to invest in them. And I don't think that it's going to cost you a lot outside of tight end premium to acquire a guy like Herndon. Hopefully he bounces back healthy. Because his 2018 looked like he was coming on strong. But, yeah, I mean, you always have to tread cautiously when we're talking about the New York Jets. We're talking about a young tight end, and we're talking about injuries.
For sure. We've spent a little bit of time on the Los Angeles Rams, and you've been eloquent in your analysis. You know, these deep shots that we were used to just haven't really been there. Cooper Kupp is balling outrageous. But you know, the Brandon Cook shots, the Bobby Wood shots, those just haven't been there. And Cooks might have suffered his, you know, either fifth or sixth documented concussion last week. Is actually off to Pittsburgh this week to go see a concussion specialist. So super scary stuff, of course. But this could possibly open the door for someone like Josh Reynolds, who's hanging around on that roster as well. 6'3", 194. playerprofile.com, and a lot of high percentile stuff here. 80th percentile college dominator rating, 80th percentile college wide yards per reception, 78th percentile breakout age. So on paper, a player that I think had a pretty decent following coming out, fourth round pick, still 24, 25 years old. I like this offense. I don't like what the offense has been doing prior to guys like Cooks going down. Is there hope for Josh Reynolds going forward?
Absolutely. I mean, you remember last year when Cooper Kupp went down and this same exact conversation started. We started talking about Josh Reynolds again. He got an opportunity and then he goes out week 8 against Green Bay, 94% snap share, puts up 19 points. Next week, or week 11 against KC, puts up 20. I mean, he started to flash. So we know that there's an upside there. He almost, to me, feels like DeMarcus Robinson does in KC, kind of in his role and his opportunity and his upside. Week to week, you just don't know with these guys, though. I would love to just acquire him, to have him if I needed a player in a flex spot. If I was playing in best ball, he's obviously a guy you absolutely want to acquire and have on your roster. But opportunity is just really weird for the Los Angeles Rams. We know Cooper Kupp's the guy right now. We know Robert Woods is going to get his opportunity. Todd Gurley's looking better. I don't know what Daryl Henderson is quite yet, but you've got Gerald Everett in there, of course. I think you mentioned him. So there's just so many mouths to feed, and I feel like outside of Cooper Kupp, week to week, I'm just not totally sure. I know Robert Woods has the floor, but between Gerald Everett, between Josh Reynolds, what are you going to get? I don't know, but we saw last year without Cooper Kupp, he had some major blow-up games.
I jotted this name down because I think you and I talked about him a little bit a couple weeks ago when kind of the stars were aligning for him, so to speak. I think we're both fans. I know I certainly am a fan, but I don't think we need to really rehash too much. But James Conner banged up again. Jalen Samuel is looking set to return. So again, the door might be reopened for Jalen Samuel. Just kind of one of those players that makes a lot of sense and just kind of needs that opportunity. So this might be that opportunity for him. So hopefully you kind of for those of us that kind of stuck with him throughout his little injury phase here, we might be rewarded, assuming James Conner misses even a little bit of time. I do want to talk about Miami again, which is really weird because it's Miami. It's 2019. Yeah. Preston Williams, Devontae Parker, are these guys, Nate, that are going to be around again once this rebuild really kind of gets going this offseason? Are these guys, maybe more so Preston Williams, but I'd love to get your thought. We joked all offseason about how this was Devontae Parker's time. Obviously, it's not Devontae Parker's time, but Preston Williams is a guy that I think you and I are both pretty interested in. So is he someone that you are going to kind of bank on moving forward in this Miami offense?
Who, Preston Williams? I mean, God, I'm so leery about these types of players, and I've battled hard against guys like this. Preston Williams, when you look at his athletic measurables, not great, a sub 50th percentile speed score, everything else is sub 35th percentile, undrafted free agent. College production, the college dominator, obviously everybody cites this, 91st percentile, so he was very productive in college. But when you look at Devontae Parker, and I'm going to go back to Parker because for some reason I just can't quit Devontae Parker. Devontae Parker has had insane air yards all year long. I think right now he's sitting at like number 14 or 15 in the NFL in air yards. His ADOT is 15.5. He's right around a 20% target share. I mean, we know that Devontae Parker is an undrafted free agent in 2021, so he's got one more year left. I would love to see Devontae Parker go somewhere else. I think that Preston Williams is going to stick around in Miami, but the reality is, if you look at the history of undrafted free agents with this level of athleticism, they don't stick around that long. So, again, a guy like Preston Williams, I would not have a fear at all to move on from him. I just don't buy into his long-term upside, but he's had a bunch of decent games in a row. He looks like the go-to guy in Miami right now. But again, all it takes is one draft class, one third-round pick, one of these names that's coming out in the next year, and suddenly, he's on the back end of that roster. And who knows if Miami decides to do something with Parker? I have no idea. Suddenly, things could be shaken up. But I would be selling Preston Williams without question.
We talked about Brandon Cooks a little bit before, a player that I was heavily invested in. Another player that I found myself heavily invested in was Juju Smith-Schuster, and things have not gone according to plan. One could say he did drop 5-103-1 last week. Kind of still alive and kicking for sure in that regard. Still a super young player. We know what he did last year. There's obviously gonna be a lot of talk going forward about what kind of Big Ben you're getting back, what kind of offense this is gonna look like going forward. This is the first year post Antonio Brown. So with all these kind of question marks swirling around, and with what he did last week against obviously a pitiful Miami team. The question came up on the timeline. I don't know if you got a chance to read it, but it was a little bit of interesting debate that I just had to throw out there because I need your 2 cents on it, and I need to get kind of the blood flowing here, buddy. So the question was, in Dynasty, are you rolling with a Cooper Kupp or are you rolling with a Juju Smith-Schuster going forward? It's weird because that really shouldn't be a question at all, one would think, as good as Cooper Kupp has been, because Juju had that legit, like, wide receiver one type dino upside almost. But here we are. Nonetheless, you know, Pittsburgh is might not be the Pittsburgh that we all know and, I guess, love.
I mean, to be honest with you, and I don't think – this might have been a debate last year, but I don't feel like it's a debate this year. I think it's Cooper Kupp by a landslide, especially when we talk about
– I love that.
When we talk about Brandon Cook's injuries and him being sort of that third banana, but a guy that had a bunch of upside, and you go look at what Cooper Kupp has done this year, now all he's done is gone over 100 yards 5 times and once over 200. I mean, he's been borderline unstoppable, right? I mean, I believe Matt Kelly referred to him as like the angel of death or something like that about the draft.
That was a fun one.
But as funny as it is, I mean, Cooper Kupp has been a revelation this year. He's tethered to Jared Goff. He's tethered to the Sean McVay creative play calling offense. I mean, there's so many reasons to like Cooper Kupp more than Juju Smith. I mean, look, the reality is that both of these players are kind of living in a realistic future situation right now because Big Ben isn't going to be around forever. And whether it's Mason Rudolph or whoever, this is what Juju Smith is going to deal with. And I do believe after watching that game the other night, amongst other games, that Pittsburgh believes that Mason Rudolph is the guy behind Big Ben, that he may be the guy for the future. It was nice to see Juju play well. But, God, Deontay Johnson has been playing well in this offense too, consistently finding himself open, having more rapport with Mason Rudolph. So, to me, when we talk about Cooper Kupp and Juju Smith, I think it's Cooper Kupp by a landslide.
I was on that side of the battle myself, and I had a lot of interesting people in my mentions. But I think for all the reasons that you outlined, man, I think I'm fascinated by that kind of pairing and that kind of argument because in my mind, like there was no way we were going to have that conversation this year, but that just goes to show you how crazy the NFL is on a weekly basis.
Think about this. If you had Cooper Kupp right now on your roster, and I came to you and said, hey, Juju Smith for Cooper Kupp straight up, would you move him?
I wasn't on the Matt Kelly side of the Cooper Kupp evaluation, so I'm a somewhat of a Cooper Kupp fan. Did not know that I'd be like a Cooper Kupp for Juju straight up guy, but that's where I am right now in my life.
I mean, the reality is that all this guy's done is smash all year long, and I guess what I come back to is this isn't a mistake. This isn't a mirage. This is real. This is Cooper Kupp week in and week out. His target share is ridiculous. His opportunity is ridiculous. And he's the most easily targeted player in an offense that's as creative as the Rams are. I mean, I'm sure there's people out there that may or may not be shaking their head about Juju Smith, but what we've always seen from Juju Smith is, yeah, Big Ben went down, but soon as Antonio Brown left Pittsburgh, it looked like Juju Smith couldn't take on that wide receiver one role. Like, he needs a little bit of time, like some seasoning needs to happen, yeah. Or maybe he needs some help on the outside. And maybe Deontay Johnson emerging is what he needs to sort of have his breakout, because we saw in that game Mason Rudolph started to get things clicking, looked a little bit better. But, man, I this is Cooper Kupp week in and week out. I mean, I don't know what to say.
Yeah, he's just a certified stud at this point, man. I mean, because again, my evaluation wasn't strong either, but all he's done is come out and just played good football on a super consistent basis. Another player that might not be as consistent as I would like him to be, but I know a player that I am a very, very big fan of, and a player that I don't think you find yourself gravitating towards as much as myself, but Aaron Jones, running back out of Green Bay. We've had some friendly banter about Aaron Jones in the past. He's coming off of a 67 yard game on the ground, but he put up 7, 159 and 2 through the air. Just goes to show his versatility. You know, a player coming out of college just kind of checked all the boxes, but had that kind of small school pedigree about him, which, you know, made some, maybe such as yourself, Nate, kind of shy away from it a little bit. But I think this kid is just kind of scratching the surface in Green Bay, and Green Bay doesn't seem too super committed to him, which is super frustrating to me as a fan. But I just want to give Aaron Jones a shine right here and kind of see if you've maybe changed your tune a little bit.
How dare you? How dare you ask if I've changed my tune on Aaron Jones? I'm not changing my tune on shit. Here's my thing about Aaron Jones, likely cut candidate. Now, I think that Aaron Jones has been really good this year, and part of that is Aaron Rodgers looks like a god recently.
Yeah,
I don't know what's
ball.
Going on. I mean, last year his numbers looked good, but I just had so many questions about how he was playing that offense. Just everything seemed a little weird, and it's really come together recently, and Aaron Jones is clearly a big part of that. I mean, I saw a tweet on the timeline. I wish I remembered who it was to give credit, but they kind of alluded to the fact that they're using Aaron Jones almost in that Todd Gurley role.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, when you put the name Todd Gurley to Aaron Jones, it makes him a very exciting piece in fantasy football, and clearly season-long, he's the guy. In terms of dynasty, I mean, I've turned the corner a bit on him because the production has just been so good. I think that this is kind of the same thing I'm saying with Cooper Kupp. If a player is going to do this, if they're just going to continue to game after game, find ways to score points and be effective, we knew Aaron Jones was good. You can go back to last year from week 10 to week 15. He puts up 32, 27, 18, 15, 19. I mean, we all knew he was good, but the question was, is his role going to be long term? Well, I think the sample size is big enough to say that the Green Bay Packers do like him. He has outproduced his draft position by a mile. And he could be the guy that sticks around there. I would be more comfortable investing in him now after I've seen him a few more weeks. Everybody's afraid they're going to get Thomas Rawls, right? Like, nobody wants that to happen. We don't want to be left holding the bag. But he's looked really, really good, and he's had some big-time opportunity. I mean, he's had games where he's had a significant amount of targets to go with, you know, 17, 15 carries. So he's being used in all facets of the field. He's scoring touchdowns, so his points are way up. I've turned the corner on Aaron Jones. I do like Aaron Jones.
I love that.
I would support those that want to invest in him.
I love that. Man, I knew you would come around, Nate, and that's why we're gonna have to keep revisiting Aaron Jones on a weekly basis here, because I feel like, again, this kid is just scratching the surface. I want to remind all my friends and fellow Aaron Jones. I don't have to remind the fellow Aaron Jones truthers, because they already know. You pull up playerprofile.com. You got a picture, okay? Uh-oh. Matt Kelly puts pictures on playerprofile.com, Nate. He's got a picture of Christian McCaffrey as the best comparable. And we know how I feel about Christian McCaffrey. Wow. I love the comparison. 96th percentile college dominator for Aaron Jones, 96th percentile college yards per carry, 90th percentile college target share. All this kid does is check boxes. And when he's given that opportunity, as he has been in Green Bay, at times we want there to be more, but he has shown that he can carry the load, as you kind of alluded to here. So, big Aaron Jones guy going forward. I hope Green Bay does him right, and if Green Bay does him wrong, I hope he goes to a team that, you know, lets him kind of latch onto that full-blown three-down back, you know, cowbell type role. The next topic of conversation as we look to wind things down here, Nate, is we don't really have to spend too much time here. I just wanted to throw it out there. I've received my fair shit, you know. It's been tough being a Raiders fan, you know what I mean? But I'm one of the more pessimistic ones, As some may know. But man, this Oakland offense looks super fun on a weekly basis. It seems like what Jon Gruden's doing with these tight ends, Darren Waller, who's having a hell of a season, with Foster Moreau, who kind of gets put on the field at the same time and kind of is that next player in line if Darren Waller, God forbid, was to go down. They got Tyrell Williams back last week. Josh Jacobs looks like the legit, offensive rookie of the year. And they got all these pieces coming together. So I don't know if you have any Oakland thoughts. I just wanted to kind of let them, kind of have their time on the show right now. We can skip right over if you don't have anything else to add. You can talk about Hunter Renfrow if you want.
Oh, I get a little chub when I hear the name Hunter Renfrow come up in a casual conversation. Big fan of what he did, but this was a guy that we all knew that came from a prominent school, so his level of competition was strong, played with great players around him, so his teammate score was high. And as you alluded to, Hunter Renfrow gets a touchdown, what, last week, 88 yards, four catches. I mean, what can't he do? What can't Hunter Renfrow do out there?
Bro, he looks like your accountant, looks like your pool boy. I know he's checking all those boxes for sure.
He's gonna be a long-term piece in this offense, and I believe that. And who knows if he can't take on, that Julian Edelman slot type role. It's very possible. I mean, when Julian Edelman first came in, or any player that's kind of that same cut of cloth, a lot of people were dismissive. And all Hunter Renfrow has done has been, huge in big games and made crucial plays. So I wouldn't write him off, but and he also doesn't cost you much to lock onto your roster and hold on to. But yeah, I'm with you. What are the odds of him being something prominent in fantasy football? Probably pretty low, but big fan of Josh Jacobs, man. He is just killing it.
Yeah, he looks really, really good. And I certainly kind of undersold him to an extent, and he's gone out and played some really, really good football. Speaking of underselling,
Oh, God.
Ty Johnson, man, he was that name last weekend. We saw Kerryon Johnson, excuse me, go on injured reserve. Everyone figured, man, the time is now. Push all those fab chips in and go get Ty Johnson. Ty Johnson did dick last week, Nate.
Thank you.
There really wasn't much to write home about. So you just got left holding the bag, unfortunately. I like the opportunity. We talk about opportunity all the time. Kerryon Johnson went down, kind of a no-brainer. Can't fault anyone for going all out, but this is kind of what you get. I know I personally wasn't super, enthralled with a Ty Johnson coming out of school. Did have a 86th percentile speed score, 92nd percentile, his 40-yard dash, 4.4 speed. So some things to like, but not a player that, again, I was super excited about, even when the opportunity was presenting themselves. Were you one of the wise ones, Nate, that kind of withheld the cash and kind of lived to fight another day?
Why, God? Why? No, I wasn't. No, I bought into Ty Johnson like everybody else, was a goddamn fool, got left holding the bag. I mean, so what? He had 11 touches. Look, here's the thing about the Detroit Lions. I was told all year that Kerryon Johnson wasn't going to be used as a primary back, and I think he's currently like number 13 in the NFL in opportunity share in terms of the running back position. So the combination of targets and carries. He goes down. They don't replace him with anybody. Nobody goes to Detroit. They didn't add anybody. That's still Kerryon Johnson's job, and I get it. If you own Kerryon Johnson like me, you had to pick up Ty Johnson because the athleticism and the burst and the yeah, it's real great. It was fantastic, except when it doesn't fucking translate, it doesn't work out for you in terms of fantasy. And we all got sucked into it last week. Everybody got pulled into this Ty Johnson trap, and you look at, Carson, 30% of the offensive snaps. McKissick, 25%. They brought in freaking Paul Perkins. Why? Why? Why did they do that? Look, if you're going to just let Ty Johnson have his moment, for Christ's sakes. The point is, if you don't have Kerryon Johnson, you don't want any Johnson in Detroit. You just want Kerryon, and that's the only guy. And I'm going to wink, wink, because my newest Dynasty Buys article may have been about Kerryon Johnson, a player that I love, a player that has faced a ton of stacked boxes, which Nick Chubb and Todd Gurley and Zeke and all these other guys have not seen on the consistent level that he has. Big fan of Kerryon Johnson. Ty Johnson, you can go to hell.
put the there's only one Johnson or no Johnson in Detroit on like a bumper sticker or something like that. And that shit is selling. Put the fucking Breakout Finder logo right next to it too. It was a full blown running back by committee in Detroit. Scary stuff for those like my friend Nate here who emptied the clip on Ty Johnson.
I've got one for you here.
Yeah,
Ryan.
Nate, please go ahead, man. This is
in
all
the spirit of Halloween. I'm going to ask you a question and I hope your answer's right.
I've been honestly, before you even ask it, I've been staring at your blue text for the better part of like 30 minutes. And with every topic that we go through, I'm in back of my head. I'm thinking about an answer to this. So I have one. I hope it's right. Let's see.
I hope it's right too. It's not a position we often talk about necessarily. Okay. Ryan, which player is most similar to trick-or-treating in the rich neighborhood and then getting a box of raisins at the door?
I wish you didn't just say your little, like, it's not a position. Like, now you're my fucking head. Now I know that what I was thinking was not what you were thinking.
It might be.
I can tell you it's not. I'm going to give you my answer, and then I would love to hear what you were thinking. So my answer, the way that I interpreted this, was the first player that I thought of was Odell Beckham. You get all the Cleveland Browns hype, you get, you know, the Baker Mayfield hype. This is the offense. Odell, quarterback upgrade of the century. He's gonna smash. Odell's been a big, again, if we had high class editing around here, we could have put a fucking fart noise in here or something like that. But
we still can.
Be on the lookout for that. Can. We still can. Odell Beckham was my answer, man. It's just Odell Beckham is the epitome of cruising around all these nice ass houses, knowing that they got the king size bars, but you're knocking on the door and they're handing you could be worse than raisins, could be a bag of those little pretzels. Odell Beckham's like getting like a bag of stale pretzels this year.
You know what, I'm gonna give you some credit because Odell Beckham wasn't the name I was going for, but they play in the same offense. I will say this before I go for my answer. Look, has it ever been substantiated that going to the rich neighborhoods equates to bigger candy bars? Has it ever?
My growing up, my neighborhood was by no means a rich neighborhood, but there was one house where it was substantially bigger than all the other houses. And the dude did every year. He handed out, like, I'm not even sure they were king size bars, bro. Maybe I was just so young that I didn't know any better, but dude, I feel like these bars were bigger than whatever king size were. And there was a year that I went with like three different masks and I went back three times and I just stacked up that year. So I think for the most part though, you're right. And it's all bullshit, but there's one house in the neighborhood. There's always that one house in the neighborhood, Nate.
That's what I'm going to do though. If I ever end up the wealthy house in the neighborhood, which will probably never happen, I'll probably, even when I'm in my 40s, I'll be taking my kid out of my own neighborhood. Let's go to the rich neighborhood.
Let's find somewhere else. Yeah, let's find somewhere else.
I'm just like perpetuating this lie,
right,
this myth.
Fair enough.
But if I ever have a big house, just to mind F everybody, I will give out big candy bars for like a year. And then I'm going to hit him with, like, raisins the next year.
Right, switch it up.
Yeah, then hit him with cranberries. Humble. Yeah, humble him. Well, I had to work for it when I was a kid. You know, you go hard. You fill up a pillowcase full of candy. You go dump it at home. You go back out, change costumes, go to the same houses.
Exactly. Got to hustle, man.
It
got to hustle.
It was just embarrassing. Not as embarrassing as Baker Mayfield has been this year. And that is my equivalent to raisins at the front door, because – did we not hear all offseason that Baker Mayfield was going to have this incredible season, that Baker Mayfield was going to break out? He was going to be the guy. We go back and look at his college numbers, you know, drafted where he was drafted. They had Odell Beckham. Beckham's back with Jarvis Landry. They've got Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb's going to be great. They've got David Njoku who goes down. Can't wait till Njoku gets back. Baker Mayfield's been a stink bomb, man. He has been terrible game over game. He finished with a negative game. He's finished with three games this year under double-digit points. He's finished with four games under 12 points. He's got multiple interceptions. He's just been awful in this offense. And if you watched his recent interview, he acted like a total bitch and sacked out on a question on there and just acted like a complete diva. And I don't know what to do with Baker Mayfield, but I'm glad that I don't own him literally anywhere. But because he's been so bad, Odell Beckham has been a stink bomb too. This whole Cleveland offense is on notice. I mean, I even like Nick Chubb, but he's been putting the ball on the ground. What the hell is going on in Cleveland?
It's all bad, man. It's all bad. I tried to withhold my thoughts on the Baker interview, but I think I threw out like a tweet or something like that. I largely don't care what he said or how he said it. I really don't give a shit about half that stuff. But I will say, like, him taking the bait, you know, Tony Grossi and him have had a thing since he arrived in Cleveland pretty much. And obviously Baker's a pretty outspoken guy and a personality in his own right. So, and Grossi's largely a troll for the most part. And he knows what to say to get a rise out of these players. And Baker, I was surprised that he kind of succumbed to the poking and the prodding and getting baited in. I think that in general was kind of a bad look. And our guy, AFC to NFC, my boy Justin on Twitter, man, who is a diehard Cleveland guy, the way that he kind of summarized it was interesting to me too. Like, if Baker is getting so fired up at these media reporters, if someone talks shit to him, you know, breaking the huddle on the field, like how easy it is it to just get those apartments upstairs, man, and just get in his head and just totally rattle this dude. So I think it was kind of a bad look in general. Don't really care too much about how he said it or what he said, whatever like that, but definitely a bad look to your point. Let's leave the Cleveland offense so far in the rear view right now and talk about something else. A few more players, a few more topics to go here, and then we'll get the hell out of here. Corey Davis. Remember him? Tennessee
Titan,
I think.
How about Corey Davis?
There's a new quarterback under center. Ryan Tannehill, another name you may or may not be familiar with. Mm-hmm. So Corey Davis, is the question simple, Nate? Is Corey Davis back with a new quarterback in town?
I just want to say, if we isolate the games that Ryan Tannehill has been quarterbacking, so let's look at week 6, 7, and 8. Corey Davis has double the air yards. His market share of the air yards, he's got 31% of the team's air yards. So he's out-targeting A.J. Brown. He's got more receptions. He's got twice the air yards. He's almost got twice the A-dot. He's become the focal point of this offense. In fact, A.J. Brown is right there neck and neck with Adam Humphries over this same period of time. And I'm a big fan of A.J. Brown. I just acquired him in a deal. I think he's a talented player, but I think this might be the change that Corey Davis needed. Mariota wasn't getting it done. Tannehill throughout his career, not a lot of people are big fans of him. Career 63% completion percentage, but multiple seasons over 4,000 yards passing. He's proven that he can be a decent quarterback enough that he's better than Mariota at this point. They needed to do something. But I tried to buy Corey Davis in another league. I tried to buy him forever when he was down because truly, I think we all believe the talent was there. We knew that there was a deficiency in the offense, and you can't completely hinge that on Corey Davis. The air yards have been there for a majority of the year. The target opportunity has been there for parts of the year. I mean, you know, his highest targeted game was week 7 with 7 targets. That's not great. Guys like Cooper Kupp are eviscerating that number. They're having twice that number in some weeks. So his target floor, still not that high, but if you're a fan of the talent, you've got to be buying. I don't know what Tennessee's plan is at quarterback. I think they roll into next year with Ryan Tannehill. They might feel complacent momentarily at the position, but I got to believe that if you were a fan of Corey Davis coming out of college, you're not selling yet because he just has never really ascended to that level that any of us believed in. But he's almost at that Andy Dalton level where he's just good enough that you can't do anything with him. You don't want to trade him for fear of him blowing up, but his value is not high enough to make up for where you drafted him. So you're either taking a loss if you sell him, or you got to wait till he strings together more weeks. But me personally, I'm a fan of Corey Davis. I'm going to hold on to Corey Davis. I hope that I don't have to start him week to week, but he's put up some better games this year.
For sure. Yeah. I want to believe in Corey Davis, so I'm excited for whatever the future may hold. If it was a change at signal caller to kind of spark that, so be it. So I'm excited. I've unfortunately been kind of holding pat with my Corey Davis teams as well. So I am all in on Corey Davis and the rejuvenation tour. Speaking of the Cincinnati Bengals, though, let's talk about another player that's kind of made an appearance 2 or 3 weeks now on this show, and that's Auden Tate. He just looks like obviously a huge benefactor of the AJ Green absence. But Andy Dalton benched, so this offense is, you know, kind of changing gears in that regard. There was reasons to be skeptical about, you know, Tate, given the injury, given the draft capital and kind of where he was on the depth chart prior. But it's been a pretty consistent showing from Tate. Are we ready to kind of say, Nate, and definitely that, you know, Auden Tate is here, and we're excited about it to an extent?
I'm not. I'm just not going to get on that. First off, it's Ryan Finley time. It's Ryan Finley time in Cincinnati. I know. It is weird. Got to let that thing sink in. Here's why I'm not. For redraft, sure. Sure. I mean, yeah, there's reason to like him for redraft. Multiple games and double-digit points for production this year. He's had three games with over 10 targets. So his opportunity's been decent. His floor, his lowest game of targets has been 6, which is still hot. Well, sorry, 2, but a majority of his games have been greater than Corey Davis's opportunity. But remember, this is a team that did not trade AJ Green and plans to continue using him. This is a team that had John Ross show out early in the year and then he gets hurt. This is a team that still has Tyler Boyd. And this is a team that cannot establish the run, so Joe Mixon hasn't really had a lot of opportunity. So I think when you look forward into the next year, Tate doesn't really have a significant role in this offense. I don't believe. Now, if you want to hold him long-term in the hopes that AJ Green ends up leaving this offense or gets hurt again or whatever, that's fine. But I just don't believe when we talk about these players, late-round draft picks, mediocre athleticism. I realize his speed score is 71st percentile. His college dominator was 75th percentile. But I'm just not buying a player like this long-term. If you own him, if there's somebody that's in need of a third wide receiver, of a flex player, I would totally be willing to move him. Again, this is the Preston Williams thing to me. I am absolutely not afraid to move these players off my roster because the historical probability of these guys continuing this throughout their career or for multiple seasons, there is a very, very, very short history of it. And because of that, I would absolutely move on from a subpar athlete with late draft capital in a situation that has been inflated due to injuries and things to that extent.
It's a very reasonable and fair take, Mr. List. Let's talk about a guy that friend of the show, Uncle Sigmund Bloom, was a very, very big fan of, as were many other notable analysts, given kind of. Of course, the offense that he was in and where he was going in drafts. But something happened last weekend that was a bit unexpected and a little bit weird for those that were kind of ready to tout him and kind of collect that reward. Kiki Kuti of the Texans, obviously Will Fuller gone for several weeks. So Kuti, one would thought last week, headed into things that he was going to be one of the prime, you know, benefactors of these, you know, Will Fuller targets. What happens is he gets benched for someone named DeAndre Carter. I just feel like we might have seen the last of Kiki Kuti. I feel like that's not going to happen, I don't think, but it just feels like I don't know what happened kind of to start that game to where how things ended for him. Because he was a player that was definitely buzzed about. So effectively benched, Nate. Is it time to kind of wait and see with Kuti, or is he benched indefinitely, or what the hell is going on?
When Kenny Stills joined the Houston Texans, it was time to move off of Kiki. It was over. That was the day that he died. I mean, there was never a chance that DeAndre Hopkins, Kenny Stills, Will Fuller, all healthy playing in this offense, was going to create a role for Kiki. It just didn't exist. I mean, I don't know where he was going to fit in. And there's this affinity amongst fantasy players to own these, you know, these higher end guys that have played well in the past and might have a role. But when you're talking about the wide receiver 4 in an offense that's got an elite player, a high upside player, and a very good player in Kenny Stills, who has a very high floor in terms of talent, I mean, why do we want to own a guy like Kiki? What, in the event that somebody goes down and then you can plug him into your roster and completely fuck yourself when he doesn't do anything on the field? I mean, then it just becomes gambling at that point. So I was out on him the minute Kenny Stills joined the Houston Texans. Will Fuller getting hurt. Fucking surprise, surprise. Here we go again. Guy can't stay healthy. And as far as Kiki, again, I was out back then. I'm not a fan. Buy him if you want, in the hopes that he goes somewhere else. But he's just the next Taywan Taylor.
Yikes! Which is not obviously a ringing endorsement of any kind for those that have sadly followed Taylor's path thus far. The last player that I'm interested in, Nate, then you can obviously feel free to add whatever kind of cherries on top that you want to add before we call it an episode. A player that I personally invested in, player that I think is a good player at the time in a bad situation, but a situation that might have gone from bad to worse. I'm talking about Deshaun Hamilton out in Denver. We've talked about the chain and ball, I guess, that is Joe Flacco and what he does to a lot of these receiver ceilings, with the exception of Cortland Sutton, who was looking pretty good. Now Flacco banged up. Denver turning to Brandon Allen. So again, not a long term solution, but looks to figure to factor in kind of short term here. So don't know what we're getting out of Deshaun Hamilton. Is Hamilton someone that you were one a fan of at any point? And if so, two. Is this someone that you're still confident in going forward? If you weren't ever a fan, I mean, you obviously don't have much to probably comment on him, but do you have any thoughts about him long term, dynasty wise? Where do you kind of fit into the equation?
I own Deshaun Hamilton in a dynasty league. I don't own him in many spots. There's another guy that played with a lot of talent at Penn State around him. I mean, you know, obviously Chris Godwin amongst other names. I'm a fan of him. A lot of analysts kind of turned me on to him, his route running and his abilities. You know, a relatively good athlete, good enough, and playing in an offense where we truly felt like there was a role. And after Emmanuel Sanders left, thought that there was an even better opportunity. And I'm not writing off Hamilton at this point, but when you lose Joe Flacco, who hasn't been great, I mean, he's been good enough. He's a veteran quarterback. And we step into the situation we're in. I'm wondering when we get to the Drew Lock era. I think that's what everybody hopes someday. But outside of Cortland Sutton, who I just bought in a monster trade, a monster deal, I moved to get Cortland Sutton. I had to get rid of Julio Jones. Big fan of Julio, but it was time to move on. Huge fan of Cortland Sutton. Deshaun Hamilton, I don't think people should be quitting on him. There's clearly an opportunity in this offense. And I like to believe that Denver believes in him, but I don't know. What are your thoughts? I mean, what do you see for the future for Deshaun Hamilton?
Hamilton, man, 6'1", 203. You pull up his player profiler page, 80th percentile breakout age. Everything else, nothing else really kind of necessarily pops out at you. Like you said, 64th percentile spark X score, so a decent athlete. But again, another one of those situations where you kind of have to familiarize yourself with the metrics, but then you kind of turn on the tape and you see a player who's just really, really smooth, just plays the position the right way as far as the routes and his ability at the catch point, whatever the case may be, whatever kind of film takeaways that you have. I probably have similar takeaways, and I am a fan of Deshaun Hamilton. I wish the spot was a little bit better. I think things have opened up with Emmanuel Sanders' departure. They invested heavily in Noah Fant, who literally can't catch anything, so don't know what his long-term deal is there. But obviously, Cortland Sutton, bona fide wide receiver one. He'll be running opposite him, one would assume. But the questions will remain under center. Is it Drew Lock long-term? Is it a new quarterback? What does Elway do there? Elway hasn't gotten that quarterback position right, with the exception of paying Peyton Manning to come in and kind of do the hired gun thing. So I don't have a ton of confidence in John Elway or that front office selecting the right quarterback of the future to kind of pair with Hamilton. But I'm a big believer of Hamilton and his talent. So a player that, much like you, if I do have him in spots, I'm holding on to him. And that's kind of that story there, man. I got nothing else to add. I got king size candy bars to go by, man. In honor of our very affluent friend Pete Overzet, man. I feel like Pete hands out king-size candy bars.
I don't think Pete does, because if Pete is as wealthy as he's leading on, it's just financially not a good move to spend that sort of money on something that's...
Very, very little upside in king-size candy bars.
There's not. If it makes you look better. It makes you the popular guy in the neighborhood momentarily, but it soon wears off. So, yeah, I would say you know, check out the Patreon. There's a lot of cool stuff going on there. Patreon.com/breakoutfinder. Again, Ryan may or may not be doing something special in the future. We drop an audio file every week talking about a Devy talent. So for those of you guys that are trying to prep, you know, prep yourself and prime for that rookie draft, that 2020 class, we've got topics. We've talked about the Alabama group. I talked about Jonathan Taylor. We've talked about some other names in the past. We've got Dynasty Buy article coming out every week. If you want your question read on the podcast, you know where to go. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in, and we will be back next week with a special guest. If you want to know who that guest is early, go to our Patreon page. Look for our podcast post. It will drop on Saturday, and that is where you can leave a question for this guy. Big-name analyst, funny guy, good guy that if you can get a shot at getting your question answered by him, that's the guy that I'd want. So we will see you guys next week.